Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report and analyst over at Weiss Ratings. And Mike, it's always great getting you on the show just to get your macro thoughts on all the different markets that we're looking at. And whether you look at the general U.S. equities, the bond market, some of the growth and tech stocks of yesteryear, looking at really even the commodity sector, almost everything is in the red and pulling back with the exception of the U.S. dollar strength that we've seen over the last month or two. What is your take on where we're at in this market with the Fed, you know, kicking off their initial two rate hikes, some market jitters on that? We're still seeing some remnants of the war in Ukraine, but overall pressure in most markets, is it getting near a point where it's going to bounce, or what's your take?
Yeah, it is really just a mess out there. I'm reminded of that song where it says, "Nowhere to run to, baby, nowhere to hide." That's sort of a good way to describe what's going on here in the markets, because you have, as you mentioned, some of the former stars of the stock market, the technology space and things like that, that have gotten absolutely obliterated. And it's interesting when you talk about tech being down 20, 22, 23% year to date, with it only being halfway through May, that's a remarkable statistic even by itself. What I've found interesting, I think we've kind of talked about in previous episodes, is that really the peripheral tech, the junkiest of the junk tech stocks, all the SPACs we had coming public, all the profitless IPOs, a lot of those really wing and a prayer companies, they started falling apart in the middle of last year. It was very much like the dot-com bust where you had, we all think, oh, when did the bear market start back then? It was March 2000. And that's because that's when the NASDAQ as a whole and the bigger tech names started to roll over. But you had a lot of that era's peripheral junky tech stocks, you know, worst quality dot-coms, moneyless companies and so on, profitless companies that were falling apart in the middle of 1999. It just took a while for the rest of the market to notice, and then big tech to roll over starting in March of 2000. And that's very similar to what we've seen this time. Again, a lot of those weaker parts of the tech market started falling apart last year. And it's only within the last few months that you've seen, you know, the Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons, and all of this era's big tech names start to roll over as well. But even if you skip technology and you look at something like the transports more recently, transports have, you know, had a really rough week here. We've seen even, you know, one of the defensive sectors that has kind of been one of my favorites for a while start to roll over. That's consumer staples, you know, your food and beverage type companies had a rough time here. You still have, a smattering of safe havens like utilities that are holding up. And you have something like gold in terms of bullion versus mining shares. It's actually flat to slightly up on the year, which, you know, doesn't sound great because obviously we're all trying to make money, but it sure sounds great relative to losing, you know, a quarter of your money on tech stocks and something like 17% on the S&P. So again, it's a market where it's very hard to find hiding spaces. Even something like treasury bonds, which historically it's like, okay, I'm losing money in the 60% of my portfolio that's in stocks, but the 40% of my portfolio in bonds is hanging in there. That hasn't worked either, because this has been driven by inflationary fears, Fed tightening fears, unwinding of some of these bubble-ish sectors of the markets and so on. And in that environment, bonds have been getting whacked right alongside stocks. So a really tough environment. Again, gold has been kind of the outperformer, the city on a hill, what have you. But it's not like you're making money there. You're just losing a little bit less or just basically making nothing in an environment where everything else is going down. So a really tough market environment, something we haven't seen in a long, long time. And again, it's hard to find safe havens out there. But, you know, we deal with the market that we have to. And that's kind of the situation we're all in.
Well, Mike, I think that sets the table well. And it's interesting that it seems like the only safe haven that seems to be holding its own, other than gold going down less than other sectors, is the US dollar. But clearly the bond market has been in trouble for some time. And we saw maybe the lowest rates on the 10-year yield in three or four decades back in 2020, near that August level. I think it was around 40 bips. And we've seen rates increase since then. And a lot of people have said that was it. That was the peak of the bond bubble and things are rolling over. So you brought up the 60-40, the classic allocation, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Is that era over now? Are we in a bond market bubble bursting right before our own eyes? And while there may be a little bit of a bounce back in bonds, do people really need to rethink what a safe haven is at this point?
Well, you know, in an environment where even now, I mean, you look at a nominal treasury yield, a 10-year yield. I mean, it's got, as you mentioned, we bottomed out at just under, 50 basis points, 45, 50 basis points. Now we recently are sort of flirting with the 3% zone. So, we've got, it's basically a six-fold increase in yields off a very low base. But even so, if inflation's running at the most recent number in the low 8% range here in the U.S., and you're talking about a 3% 10-year yield, I mean, you're still, when you look at real interest rates, you're still losing just over 5% a year of your purchasing power, right? You're quote unquote earning a 3% yield, but if inflation's 8.3%, just do the math and, you're losing just under 5.5% of your money. So that's the situation that we're in. And it makes it very difficult to say, well, gee, my safe haven is going to be something that loses me 5.5% of my money instead of, 15% of my money. It's okay, great. I'm losing less, I suppose, but that's why even a thing like gold, again, at a roughly flatline performance on the year, is one of the best options out there. And again, in a sea of tough options, real estate has been a great play as well, residential real estate and some industrial real estate. But even there, especially the U.S. housing market, I mean, gosh, you look at what's happened to interest rates. We've had, as of a couple of weeks ago, the increase on the average mortgage payment, when you factored in surging house prices plus surging interest rates, it's about a 49-50% increase year over year in the required payment to buy the average price home. Now, I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't get a 50% raise this year, as much as I hope I'm doing a good job in my business. And that's the situation the average person on the street is facing. So you're seeing the housing market begin to weaken here as well. And I think, while it's not going to crash the way we saw in the mid-2000s when there was all this dumb mortgage lending going on, it is going to have a very hard time. We are going to see some nominal price declines in many markets. We're going to see inventory go up, demand go down. And in fact, we're already starting to see that. So, that's another thing people have been hiding in, residential real estate, and there's going to be issues there too. So again, just a very tough market environment to navigate. Everybody's had grown used to the Fed always being their friend, and the Fed is anything but your friend now, and if your theory was don't fight the Fed when the Fed was on your side, then you have to sort of look at the flip side of that and say, don't fight the Fed when it's not,
I think that's a great point, Mike. And when we have people like the ex-Fed president of New York, Bill Dudley, coming out and saying he wants to see losses inflicted on the general markets to help rein in inflation, when people say don't fight the Fed, maybe we should take them at face value, because it sure seems like they are fine with some of the market pressure we are seeing. And it's interesting you brought up the housing market and the 2008-2009 great financial crisis that came off the back of all those mortgage-backed securities imploding and the contagion effect into the insurance and financial markets that we saw then. But that was really kind of a one-off event. We hadn't seen anything like that in a long time, and it was kind of an implosion. And when you look at the pandemic flash crash of 2020, it wasn't really a garden variety correction in the markets. It was more of a flash crash, a V-shaped recovery. But yeah, this really harkens back more to, I would say, like the 2000-2001 dot-com bubble, where, really the weakness started showing up in the smaller tech stocks in 99, 98 even, and then it finally cascaded over to the largest one. Do you think this is just a period of time where most investors that are trading now haven't experienced a real market correction in a long time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I came out of college in the late 1990s, worked at a dot-com right out of college in 98. I experienced and enjoyed the tail end of that strong market, and then saw what happened firsthand when it fell apart. I mean, layoffs, bankruptcies, all the sort of optimism and hope and hype about the internet and was it TMT telecom and all that, all the Global Crossings and other companies of the world, all those companies imploding and everything. So, I mean, it was a painful experience to go through, but it was also something that taught me a lot of lessons. And, I think a lot of those lessons have been forgotten by this generation's young investors. I mean, I'm in my mid 40s. So I came of professional age into that environment. You have a lot of people in their 20s and 30s now who basically were in, grade school or middle school back then. So either they weren't investing or didn't care about the markets, or didn't learn any of those lessons. And now, unfortunately, they are. I mean, a lot of these pure garbage, no money making, IPO, no business plan type companies, there was a lot of that same junk being brought to market, being dumped on the retail investor, being hyped by Wall Street. It was very similar to what happened again, just over 20 years ago. And now we're seeing the unwind. I mean, it started with the meme stocks, and it started with the SPACs, and it started with these IPOs. And these companies, you know, the Cathie Wood sort of ARK innovation type names are down 50, 60, 70, 80% in the last year, year and a half. I mean, these aren't small losses. And the other lesson from that downturn is some of these names are never coming back. They're going to go broke and disappear. So in that environment, you absolutely have to, you know, for the money that you have in the stock market, you don't want to cash out. You want to be focused on what I kind of call big, boring, and beautiful. I mean, if you're going to own something, you know, don't own these small garbage, no profit tech stocks. Own some big, boring, dividend paying, defensive utility type names, have less money allocated to the market overall, and play defense. I don't know how long this environment's going to last, but if you start to date sort of the stealth bear market or the stealth beginning of this, and you say it was the second half of last year, you know, even the dot-com bust, I mean, it went from what? Early 2000, late 1999, it didn't bottom out till late 2002, early 2003. I mean, it was a couple year process. It wasn't something that just ended overnight. Now, I don't know if this is going to be exactly the same. You know, there's a famous quote about history not repeating itself, but it does rhyme. I think there's enough similarities to expect that, yes, this is going to be a process, an unwinding process that has already extended for many months, but it's probably not over, probably has the rest of this year and into 2023 to go. And so as long as that's the case, you should be playing defense as an investor. You should be using safe money strategies in this market, not just chasing all the junk that's already taken 50, 60, or 70% of your money and just hoping for a rebound.
Great thoughts from someone that edits the Safe Money Report, Mike. And yeah, I came of age in the same period of time. I started my professional career in 98, 99 and decided to get into the markets in 1999. And that was a rude awakening to how investing worked for me. And my father was running a business that was promoting several of the dot-com companies that were raising tens of millions of dollars on ideas that didn't have a wing or a prayer. And a lot of those companies, I watched them implode, and I watched how it affected those different companies and the people associated with them. So it was a good experience. And I'm wondering now that people were in all these hot stocks and meme stocks and cryptoverse and all the things that were going to nosebleed levels in the last year or two, they just had this huge correction, and it had to have hurt a lot of investors, but they probably didn't have safe money concepts going in their portfolio. And a lot of that money went to money heaven, and it's not coming back. And some of those companies are not coming back, to your point, just like in that last cycle. So do you think that that has kind of killed this buy the dip idea we've seen for the last dozen years? And if we are in for a longer slog here, what will you be looking for you to know that the coast is clear and maybe just shift back more to an aggressive format down the road?
You know, I think you want to get more into the sort of economic pain leg of this. I mean, if you go, we've already seen a lot of market-based pain, right? You're seeing a lot of these companies, again, the stocks that we've talked about, down so much from their highs, but you're not yet seeing a lot of the transition between the market pain to the economic pain. You're starting to see layoffs. You're starting to see some of the absolute weakest companies go under. You're starting to see a little of that. You haven't transitioned into a situation where you have bigger companies that are having real problems. You haven't transitioned into that, again, getting into that second phase that we saw in the dot-com bust in 2001 and everything. So that's the next phase. That's the next phase that we have to see. And it was towards the tail end of that, once a lot of that had worked its way through the system, that you really started to see, okay, the market has seen a lot of the pain. The economy has seen a lot of the pain. Now it's a good time to bargain fish. I just don't think you're at that stage yet.
Yeah, even the household pets are upset at this market, Mike. So it brings up an interesting point that we may not have really seen the depths of where this is going to plunge. And as people look for where to hide, if you hide in cash, you're being eroded by 8.5 inflation. If you hide in even some dividend paying stocks, you still run the risk of those stocks correcting. So I guess when you look at something like the precious metals, a lot of people say, yeah, but I want to get a yield and gold doesn't pay a yield. And now that treasuries are starting to yield a little bit more in the 3% range on the 10-year, maybe that's going to steal some of gold's thunder. But do you think over time, as the Fed continues to hike and there's more market turbulence, that they may reach that breaking point, that tipping point where they have to pause and then eventually reverse course? And could that be what gives gold a vaulted move over a lot of these other asset classes?
Yeah, I mean, we need to see some of the pressure on yields ease up. We need to see some of the upward pressure on the U.S. dollar ease up. I mean, you know, we don't talk about it a lot, but the U.S. dollar has had a tremendous run in the last few quarters. And that's part of the reason that, you know, precious metals have outperformed stocks and bonds and so on, but certainly haven't wrapped themselves in glory. I think if you do see people realize, geez, the Fed can't go any further because we're on the cusp of recession, or the housing market is starting to crack and so on. Even some of the earnings we just got this week out of companies like Walmart and Target that were absolutely terrible. And, you know, the stocks had their worst days since just before the 1987 stock market crash. That's telling you that inflation is tipping from sort of a pressure, a force just driving prices, to a pressure that really growth from a growth standpoint, the economy can't handle. You know, the lower end of the wealth income spectrum is just getting crushed by gasoline prices that, you know, are almost up to, or in some parts of the US, like California, are over $6 a gallon. You've got diesel prices that are high, food prices, grocery prices, I think in the last CPI report were up the most in a quarter century and so on. So you've got numbers like that are really starting to bite at the low end. At the high end, and you know, as more of this tech effect spills through the economy and you get layoffs in that part of the economy, and you know, smaller job creation and commercial real estate having issues in housing, all those things are going to add up and be enough pressure on the economy that I think that the dollar move, the interest rate move is going to reach a breaking point. And that's when I think you're really going to see, okay, on top of gold giving you volatility protection and protection against chaos insurance, I sometimes call it, you're also going to have the relief valve of the dollar not going up anymore, interest rates stabilizing. And that probably is going to give an extra leg to gold and precious metals in general. So I think you may be getting pretty darn close to that now. So, I mean, I've been bullish on the metals for quite some time now. I've been willing to hold them through this recent price pressure that we've had. And I think that if you see that the sort of dollar point be reached, that's when you're going to see the downward pressure on gold end and a new upward move begin.
Yeah, it's really an interesting stew of market forces here, because we have these really high inflation numbers. So people that are hiding in the quote unquote strong dollar or king dollar, it may seem strong compared to other equally devalued fiat currencies, but it's really not strong as far as purchasing power. The purchasing power is being eroded by that inflation. And when you look at the consumer has now moved through all their stimmy checks. They've moved through some of their savings. And now there's a lot of metrics showing massive increases in credit card debt. And so that demand side of the equation is going to start waning because they're getting hit from all angles. And then companies are getting hit by, you know, we just saw a PPI number around 11%. So the producer's price index, the producers have to push those costs along to consumers. So we see cost push inflation. And if that eventually starts hitting their bottom lines, to your point earlier, they're going to have to start laying off folks. We haven't quite seen that yet because it's still a pretty strong labor market. But if we see the labor market weaken, do you think we're entering a stagflationary period similar to what we saw in the 1970s?
Yeah, I mean, it already seems, as you mentioned, to be heading in that direction. And I just think, again, we, you know, we've got pressure on the lower end of the income spectrum that with just from inflation eating up so much of the paychecks. I mean, the wage increases that they've gotten, really, when you factor in inflation, it's actually negative real wage growth. So you layer that on top of that, the stimulus money drying up. And then again, the upper end, you know, as the confidence is hurt and a lot of the, you know, you see Silicon Valley going from spending every penny they can get their hands on to pinching every penny they have, all those things are going to filter through. And yes, it's an environment where inflation pressures are still going to be high, but growth is going to slow. And that's not a good environment for the stock market. It's a big part of the reason we're seeing what's going on there now. And I think that sort of environment isn't going to change on a dime. So I do still think you've just got to be defensive. You've got to keep that safe money approach in mind and, you know, not be doing anything crazy in your equity portfolio and definitely be looking at protection from precious metals.
Well, when you look at the potential that the Fed could keep hiking us into potentially a recession, an inflationary recession, some people are pointing to the odd characteristic of the US dollar being so strong and saying it's deflationary and that if we saw a market crash, it would actually be somewhat deflationary. But in that kind of an environment, a lot of people are emailing us and saying, should I be in cash because at least I'm only losing to inflation? Or should I take a risk on a dividend paying stock? Or should I be in the precious metals? Will they get sucked down the drain with everything else? So since you write the Safe Money Report and you look at these, and I know you see value to all those theses, is the safest bet for people to be more in cash now than they typically are?
You definitely want to have a higher cash percentage. Yes. I mean, let's be honest, cash is not great in an inflationary environment, but as long as you also have you know, your allocation to precious metals, as long as you also have your allocation to reasonable defensive dividend stocks, having a much higher percentage of cash on hand when assets like stocks and real estate are depreciating or losing ground is going to allow you to pick up the pieces when we get through this thing and, you know, have some buying power to scoop up assets on the cheap. So, you know, that's sort of a dual benefit of cash. I mean, sure, you might be losing to inflation, but you're going to have a lot of purchasing power to buy assets that are depreciating much faster than cash at cheap levels and, you know, participate in the next upswing. So that's how I think you kind of have to think about it. It's like, okay, sure, I'll lose some to inflation, but you know, if I was in tech stocks and I lost 40% over the course of this downturn or whatever the case may be, and I lose 8% in cash, all right, you know, then I can scoop up tech at a super cheap basis and make money on the upside once we get through this process. So just something to keep in mind, cash is not great, but it certainly does give you that purchasing power when it's time to start buying again.
Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Mike. Some good thoughts for investors to consider. It is a tough time for investors out there, regardless of what sector you're in. And there are very few places to hide. But it's interesting to see how things are unfolding with this Fed rate hiking cycle. And it'll be interesting to see how far they get into this before we reach that tipping point. But we'll keep following along with the markets. We always appreciate you coming on the KE Report, Mike, and sharing your thoughts with us. We'll put a link down below to the Safe Money Report and looking forward to our next conversation.
Perfect. Sounds good.